Welcome to a special Q&A episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
Hello there. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Still recovering from the holiday haze that was Christmas and New Year. By the way, I didn't ask you on the episode we did with Scott post-Christmas. Did you get any DC Comics related gifts over the Christmas season?
I have not properly celebrated Christmas yet because my family's been out of town, so I'm waiting a couple more days till they get back to celebrate fully. But I have gotten one gift so far, and it is DC Comics related. I'm so easy to shop for. You just give me anything with Batman or any DC character on it, and I'm covered. I'm sure you're the same way, probably. But I got this. It's called a Brickhead. It's these Legos that they kind of look like Funko Pops when you put them together, but they're made by Lego, and it's called a Brickhead. And I got one for Batgirl from the Lego Batman movie. So that's the one gift I've received so far, and it is DC related. And it was cool. So how about you, man?
Yeah, I got a couple of things actually. One is it's a hybrid T-shirt with the logo of my favorite hockey team and the Superman logo mixed together.
Oh, nice.
My cousin who bought me that was very smart because it kills two birds with one stone.
I know Bill Raimi has one that's the Batman logo mixed with the Dallas Cowboys logo.
It's the same idea, but mine is the Toronto Maple Leafs, obviously, because I'm a Leafs fan and hockey.
Yeah.
Fan, so
that's awesome.
So, yeah, she killed two birds with one stone. and then I got a first print edition of Bane Vengeance, or Batman Vengeance of Bane number 1 from 1993.
Oh, nice. I love that comic.
So I got that, and I also
That's the one where you see his origin in Santa Prisca, right?
Yeah. I've read the digital copy, but I haven't read, obviously I didn't touch the one I just got because, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I've read it. It's collected with Nightfall in the Nightfall trade.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I've read it there, but that's awesome.
Exactly. And then I also got a first print edition of Action Comics number 295 from 1962. So that's a really special one that I'm happy to have in my collection. So yeah, those were those were the three main DC related gifts that I got, so I'm pleased. I was
That's
very
awesome.
Happy. It's cool addition, so I'm good. But with the holidays, except for you, you have a delayed holiday coming, but for everybody else, the holidays are well and truly over, and we have business to attend to, and that is so let's get to it. We've been promising to do a Q&A episode. We've been wanting to do a Q&A episode for a while. And finally, we got enough questions to justify it. Before we do that, we are going to cover some brief news because the holidays are sparse for news. But we do have something. So what are we covering?
Well, I would say it's a pretty – we only have one thing, but it is a pretty big one because we have a new trailer to discuss.
Yeah.
And
not for Aquaman, just so anybody getting excited and hasn't been on the internet for a couple of weeks, it's not an Aquaman trailer. Don't get too excited.
No, it's not an Aquaman trailer. The funny thing is we were expecting to be having a Flash live action movie coming in early 2018 at one point. Unfortunately, that's not on the table anymore for early 2018, but a Flash animated movie is. It's the latest in the direct-to-video Lego DC animated line, and it's called Lego DC Super Heroes The Flash. And we got our first trailer for it, Adam.
Yeah. I the only one I've watched from this particular line is the first one, the Batman.
Yeah, Lego. It's called Lego Batman the Movie DC Superheroes Unite. Is that first one I think that you're referring?
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the Lego Batman movie, which was epic, and we'll review that.
Yes, I will point that out. This line, it's very interesting because this line is out of continuity with the Lego Batman movie and the other Lego theatrical films. These are in their own continuity. And the interesting thing is, this is the first one we're getting since 2016. And my own theory about that is that in 2017, obviously, we did have the Lego Batman movie come out, the theatrical film. And I think that they wanted to avoid any confusion in terms of the continuity between these with that. We did get a Lego DC Superhero Girls film, which is separate from both of those, in 2017. But we had been getting about two of these a year for a while. And they held off on that last year. So this is our first one since 2016. And yeah. I think that's because of the Lego Batman.
And that makes sense. I mean, it would be brand confusion if you had done a Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie and then another one of these direct-to-video Lego movies. So I think that is a valid valid reasoning that you put forward. So there's a good call on that one. But I really like this trailer. I mean, what do we got? We got the Flash. You know, basically, the Flash is late. He misses a distress call from the Justice League.
Yeah.
And then he also loses his powers. And subsequently, he's fired by Batman from the Justice League. And
which is funny because if you remember back in the live-action Justice League movie, Superman threatened that he'd get fired from the team if he lost that race.
Yeah, and it's true. So it's there is a little bit of continuity ever so briefly. he was essentially doing things that were. Or supposedly the Flash was doing things to hinder other members of the league. So like,
yes, my favorite thing was that he put fire extinguishing shampoo. He switched out Firestorm's shampoo with fire extinguisher, which was very funny because obviously he can't activate his powers.
Yeah, and then he put an egg beater on one of Cyborg's arm. Like he replaced the arm with an egg beater. And as Cyborg says, you know, the eggs are phenomenal, but still, all of a sudden I had a craving as I was watching that for bacon and eggs.
Hey, well, just ask Cyborg, Adam. He'll cook some up for you.
Yeah, there you go. And then we find out that it wasn't actually the Flash, but it was the Reverse Flash who had done that. And who had gone back in time and tampered with the Speed Force so that Flash would lose his powers and such. And so, the team then has to unite. And the Flash, I guess, is going through the course of the film, probably try and rectify the situation and prove his worth to the to be reinstated as a member of the league. But I thought it was it was funny, and it... It echoed the tone of, I know it's a different continuity, but it very much did echo the tone of the Lego Batman movie, which I appreciated. So I really liked it. Were there, before we get to your thoughts, are there any noticeable voices in the voice cast?
I think Troy Baker is voicing Batman. He's voiced Batman in, I think, all of these. And, of course, he voiced him in the Batman the Telltale series, too.
Yes.
I should say that's still ongoing, and he's voiced the Joker several times before too, so I believe he's doing Batman. We haven't gotten a voice cast for this. That's just me picking up on the voice for him.
Okay, so we haven't gotten the cast yet.
It sounded like it was Kerry Payton as well, so I think that he's pretty much the most, he's the Kevin Conroy of Cyborg, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and he also did Aqualad, or he's doing Aqualad for for Young Justice, right? So I mean, I'm on board. I can't wait to watch it. It looks funny. What about you? What are your thoughts?
I thought it was good. I wasn't in love with it, but I thought it was all right. There were really only two issues I had with it. First of all, there's this scene. The way it opens up is with Batman giving Ace a belly rub and making this awful voice that I never want to hear Batman make again. Like, I don't know what on earth was up with that. And then I don't know who's voicing Reverse Flash, but I was not impressed with that either, because they're doing this weird thing with Reverse Flash where he's rolling all his R's, and I just didn't care for that. It makes him a lot less menacing than I feel like Reverse Flash should be.
Yeah, fair enough. I'd agree with that.
Yeah. But overall, the story looks cool, like in terms of Reverse Flash manipulating things. We got a brief description of the movie where it said something. This I feel like I didn't really pick up on in the trailer, but it said that Reverse Flash is basically making the Flash relive the same day over and over again, sort of a Groundhog Day
right,
type of thing.
Right.
That didn't really come through to me in the trailer, but I guess that's also happening. But yeah, he does take away his powers somehow. I guess he like siphons off the Speed Force from him or something. But that's the whole plot seems pretty cool. And Barry apparently getting at the very least getting framed for doing these things to the other Justice League members, like the thing where he put fire extinguisher, like we talked about in Firestorm Shampoo. That was funny. So there were some pretty funny humorous beats in this trailer that I dug. And it looks like we're getting to see a lot of characters in this movie. I mean, Lois Lane had a brief moment in the trailer. So did Dr. Fate. It looks like is in it. I think I caught a glimpse of Zatanna as well. So it looks like we're getting I guess Barry might be going to some of the more mystical heroes in the DC universe to see if they can help him out with this. I don't know. I feel like I don't understand what Dr. Fate or Zatanna would, how they'd be able to help him with the Speed Force necessarily, but maybe that's what he's thinking at least at first. I don't know, but I'm excited to see them.
And the cool thing that one of the other things I noticed is the Flash title card is very reminiscent of the television series.
Oh, shoot. You know, I didn't even notice that. But while you bring it up, though, this is the first in this line that's not either Batman focused or just a general Justice League one. So this is the first time the Flash or any other heroes other than Batman, it's not really a solo film, but in terms of him getting a very focused on
Flash centric. Yeah.
The release date, you've got a release date as well.
Yes, February 13th, correct?
February 13th on digital and on Blu-ray and DVD on March 13th. So we're definitely reviewing this sometime around then.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And to go back to your point about this being the first, but that's not Batman or Justice League centric. I think they should start doing that. With these Lego movies to further distinguish between the Lego Batman movie, but also exposure for some of the other characters. I think the animated line should the DC AU should also, start focusing on other characters aside from just Batman and Superman. As much as I love those two characters, I think, it'd be cool for some of the other DC heroes to get the spotlight. Like, I don't know about you, but I'd love to see like a Green Arrow DC AU animated movie, or hell, even a Lego Green Arrow directed DVD movie, because you could, with the Lego aspect, you could do a lot of play with the different type of arrows that he shoots. And just as an example, that Green Arrow short that we got, the DC AU short, I thought it was it was fantastic. Yeah. So I mean, and maybe as we get closer to or at some point in this this new year here, we'll do the Superman Shazam one. Because that was a good one, and it's Shazam is coming this year, next year as a film. But
That would be next year. Yeah, but that would be a great thing to review, to sort of lead up to that. There, all those animated shorts that they used to go along with the animated films in the DCU AOM line, all of them were good. My favorite, you could probably guess, was the Catwoman one.
Yeah, and they're on the DVD, right? They're on that one DVD. So if you have that DVD, you have them all.
Remember the new box set of all of them, and they have them all five of the shorts are on that, the big box set.
Right, but they're also on the, if you bought the Superman Shazam DVD.
Oh, shoot. I didn't even realize it's the same kind of separate. Did it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They sold Superman Shazam as a separate DVD, but on that DVD, there's the other shorts.
Okay. I didn't even realize that. Wow. Okay. I thought for some reason I thought Superman Shazam, I had it in my mind that it had been like the other ones that had been attached to one
It was a separate release. They released that on its own, but what they did afterwards was they made it a DVD and Blu-ray, and on the DVD Blu-ray, because Superman Shazam is only 30 minutes,
yeah,
they put on the other five short, or the other four or five shorts, whatever it is, on that DVD and Blu-ray, and it's relatively cheap. So I think it's like $10. So you can if people don't want to spend the $100 and some odd dollars for all 30 DC films, animated films, and if you already have those films, but you don't have the Superman Shazam, you can get that DVD and Blu-ray for like $10, and you can have all of them, all the shorts as well. So
I wonder if they'll do a special edition for that leading up to the Shazam film, because they did, if you remember, they did a commemorative edition of the 2009 Wonder Woman animated film when the live-action Wonder Woman film came out. So I wonder if they'll do a...
Well, yeah, I mean, they could re-release that, but I think it's still in circulation, so I don't see just a straight re-release. What they may do is put that and then a couple of episodes from the live-action Shazam show from the 70s on there, or they could put a couple of cartoons focusing on Shazam.
Oh, yeah, Grudge Match from Justice Unlimited.
Right, yeah, so...
So oh, that would be good.
They could do something like that, but a straight repackage of the one that's already been released and it's still in circulation, I can't see that.
Probably not. But yeah, you brought up a great point. They could put like a Shazam collection together, sort of, with some of that other stuff that you were mentioning. And like, I think it is called. Is that what it's called? I pulled that name out of my ass. I think that's what it's called. Grudge Match from Justice League Unlimited.
I believe you're right. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Amazon.
But no. And I've been planning to. I'm working on something, to try and get a guest that is well versed in Shazam and Captain Marvel knowledge.
Oh, nice. I didn't even know that. You see, listeners, I'm finding this out too.
I do for two reasons. I like to surprise you. And any crazy idea you may have to veto my guest getting ability, I nip that in the bud by just bringing them on, and then you have no way.
When have I ever vetoed a guest?
I know. Like I said, it's fun to grind your gears, and I'm still in the holiday haze, so I'm really being nice today.
My bad. I just looked it up. Grudge Match is not. That's not the episode. Grudge Match is the one with Roulette, where a bunch of the female heroes fight in the ring. No, what's the one with Shazam called? Hold up, I'm gonna look that up now because
we're still in the holiday haze, people. So just go with it.
Let's see. Say something, Adam, so that it's not dead air while I'm looking this up.
What am I gonna say? Well, we got that. We also got good news while Jordan is looking something up. Krypton has a sort of air date of March 2018. I wish they would have given us an actual day of the week, and a time would be nice. But we know it's coming out March of 2018, and we're excited for that. We'll definitely be reviewing that. Over the Christmas holiday, I learned that the Superboy TV series, The Adventures of Superman, it was later dubbed from season 2 through 4, The Adventures of Superboy. That series is turning 30 years old this year. And so we're going to have the expert, Sam J. Rizzo, back on the show. We're going to do a little bit of a retrospective on that, and hopefully convince Jordan to actually find that series and watch it, because I think he'd like it, because it's very Lana and Clark centric, so I think Jordan would really, enjoy that.
Yeah.
and it's also much more, whereas Smallville had the no flights, no tights policy, this embraces the comic book aesthetic and all the comic book trappings that you could want.
Hey, the no flights, I will defend the no tights.
I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying this is different than Smallville, because right from the get-go, like, he's in the costume and he's doing the whole Superboy slash Superman thing, right? So
okay,
it's just different. I'm not knocking it, but
yeah, okay. You gotta watch yourself when it comes to Smallville.
No, you'll know when I'm knocking Smallville. It, and I'm not. I'm trying not to do that over the holiday. I'm trying to be nice over this extended holiday haze here. You know, I told you a couple episodes.
Good, Adam.
I told you a couple episodes ago on the show that I love Smallville. I just have certain issues at certain times. No flights, no tights thing wasn't a problem, especially for most of the series. I have a problem with it in the last episode of the last season, but we'll get there when we get there.
We will get there.
So in addition to celebrating the Superboy series with Sam J. Rizzo, and we're gonna obviously do the Krypton pilot sometime in March of 2018, whenever they give us an actual date. But we're also going to be starting. I think we can announce it. We've committed to doing a special extended retrospective of Smallville. We're not going to reveal how we're going to do that, but it's going to be a maxi series in a comic book where it's a year long occurrence, and it's going to. I believe we're going to start that in March. Is that what we said?
I believe that's the plan right now. Yeah. Yes.
It's a tentative date is March.
Yeah. Just like Krypton. Hey, you can't give Krypton crap for not giving an exact date when we don't have an exact date.
Yeah. Hold on a second. But we're not a major network supported show like Krypton is supposed to be. You know, that's the difference.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, so, I found the name of the Justice League Unlimited episode, by the way.
I don't know how much more air I could kill.
I was wondering, like, I was letting you, because you were saying good things, so I was waiting, was letting you keep talking, but I did find it. I wasn't sure whether you were just keep talking because you wanted to, or whether you were still trying to wait for me.
In the back of my mind, I'm like, what's so hard about finding it? Like, how far along was this episode aired?
It's similar to you'll see why I thought it was called Grudge Match. It's called Clash.
Okay.
So another sort of fight, a name for a fight. So, that's where I was thinking.
It wasn't called Superman v Shazam Battle of the S's, was it?
No, it was not.
All right. Well, hey, that could have been who knows. So there it is. That's the episode. Maybe they'll repackage it as Shazam gets closer in 2019. But we're definitely going to review that short at a later date. But for now, let's do it. So that's it. We've covered all the news. Let's do what we promised and let's answer some questions. You have the questions ready to go, Jordan?
God damn it, Adam. No, I don't have one.
We're doing a Q&A episode and he doesn't have the questions handy. I don't understand. All right.
Hold on. You put them all in our group. You put the ones on Twitter. You could solid.
Yes, they're all on the Facebook group.
All right. I found them.
And by the way, just before we get going, thank you to everybody that's sending questions. We would definitely like to make this an ongoing, at least for sure, a yearly question. A yearly feature during the holidays. But we'd like to do this more often than that. So keep sending in questions, and we'll make a habit of doing this more often. But Jordan apparently is now prepared to do the podcast, and he has the episodes ready to go, or the questions ready to go. So let's get started. What's the first question, and who's it from?
Huh. Some guy named Jordan Valdez must be a really big fan of the Smallville episode Thirst, Adam.
For God's sakes. All right.
It's strange to me because well, I thought I was the only Jordan Valdez who would like to ask what our top three favorite scenes are in the Smallville episode Thirst.
Okay, well, first let me say that, ladies and gentlemen, this reeks of desperation because he's so desperate for me to talk about the episode Thirst that he had to ask a question on our own podcast. But I'll be a nice guy and I'll entertain and answer the question. So my three favorite elements of the episode Thirst, correct? Is that what you're asking?
Your three favorite scenes.
Okay, three favorite scenes.
And it's not me. It's some other guy named Jordan Valdez.
Yeah, sure. Everybody believes that.
It might be my Earth 2 doppelganger. Well,
listen, whatever you want to call it, your poker face, even on the internet where people can't see you, sucks. but okay, so my three favorite elements of this episode, this otherwise, in my opinion, terrible episode. Okay, my first favorite aspect of it was, I believe this was the episode where, and if I'm wrong, well, that's too bad for this episode. But it wasn't. Isn't this the episode where Chloe meets with the editor of the Daily Planet, who was played by Carrie Fisher?
Yes, it is. Pauline Kahn. Yes, Chloe does during this episode. Indeed.
Sure. Right. I love that. I love bringing on Carrie Fisher. You know, rest in peace, Carrie Fisher. What I that whole exchange was really good. It's a callback to earlier in Smallville, because we know Perry White is not yet the editor-in-chief of the Daily Planet at this point. So it's a nice callback to a previous episode as well. And I like the fact that the last name of Carrie Fisher's character was Khan, because I know it has nothing to do with Star Trek The Wrath of Khan. The head of publishing at DC at one point in time, not sure when, but she was a very high up in the ranks at DC Comics, was Jeanette Kahn. And so I think that was a nod to that individual. So I thought that was nice. So that was one of my favorite scenes, the whole interview with the editor of Daily Planet. There was the hot tub scene, right, with Lana, which is a vampire.
Lana was not in that scene, but yes.
Okay, but there was the three vampires, right? And the pizza boy.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm not going to shy away from anything. As a red-blooded male, I wanted to be that pizza boy. Who wouldn't? given the fact that it was the WB and the CW, and that everybody is friggin' attractive on that show or on that network, there's no average-looking people on that show or on that network. So. Yeah, damn right I wanted to be in that in that hot tub scene with those I think there were three ladies in that hot tub, correct?
I believe that's right. Yeah.
See, there's ways to make me remember the crappy episodes of Smallville, and this is one of those ways. So that was one of my favorite scenes. I thought it was funny. All that's missing was the cheesy 70s porn music, and it would have been could have been a porn parody. My last favorite scene was the end credits, because that crap was finally over. So there you go. There are my three favorite scenes from the episode Thirst.
I'm only accepting two of those, Adam. At least say the opening credits, because Smallville always had amazing opening credits.
I love Smallville. But yeah, I love the, the
at least say that instead of the end credits.
No,
Jesus.
The end, it puts me out of my misery. And I like the theme in the end credits. It's very Superman-y.
All right. That's fair. That's fine. Okay. I'm just happy you said some nice things about this.
You asked for my three favorite things about this ridiculous episode, and I'll give it to you.
Okay, I just ruined it. I should say I'm sure my Earth 2 doppelganger appreciates.
Nobody bought that joke from the get go. It's okay.
okay. Well, I guess I'll answer.
People can hear the scent of desperation even on a podcast, and they heard it.
Okay. All right. I guess I will answer my doppelganger's question. If I must.
We're really pulling teeth here.
We are. Yeah. okay. My third, I'll go. Did you have an order? Was that the order of them? Like 1, 2, 3 for yours? Did you?
Yeah, that was basically the order.
Okay. So you started with one and ended with three, or you started with three and then one?
I started with one because Carrie Fisher. So I'll give her number one.
Start with three and end with one.
Okay.
My third favorite scene in the episode, and for me this was very tough because I love this episode of Smallville, and I love pretty much every scene in this episode, so it was very hard for me to narrow it down. I actually, when we were getting ready to record today, I'm not going to lie, Adam, I really did think about it pretty hard and try and narrow this down. My third favorite scene is the scene where Clark and Chloe show up at the Halloween party at Lana's sorority, and they Clark is wearing a mask and a cape like Zorro, and the girl who opens the door is hitting on him, and he's like, and Chloe tells her that his name's Carlos, and she's like only letting them in because of Clark. And it's really funny because like they're both calling him Carlos, and then Clark's like sort of entranced by this girl that's at the door, and then Chloe has to drag him in. She's like, "Come on, Carlos!" And it's really funny. And then they get into the party, and then Lana is wearing a costume that I think is supposed to be a nod to Catwoman. So as a huge Catwoman fan, I think that's awesome. So that whole scene I thought was really funny, and I thought it was awesome. My second favorite scene in the episode is when Clark comes to visit Lana in her dorm room, and Lana, at first he and Chloe think that she's just hungover before they realize that she's a vampire. But that scene is also very humorous because then Lana starts like trying to make an advance on him, and he's like really freaked out because she's like well, then like the doors open and she's just starting with like no warning, and she starts like, and she's like licking his neck like she's about to butt, because she's about to bite him, and he thinks that she's just being like, you know, kinky, and but she's really about to bite him, and then she gets, it's really funny because like when he sort of starts to reject her advance, is like, what the hell's going on here? And then she gets really pissed off, and she puts these sunglasses on, and it's just hilarious. And then she walks out of the room. But so that's my second favorite scene. And then my first favorite is a scene at the end of the episode after Lana is no longer a vampire, and she and Clark are talking, and he asks her, they're at Metropolis University, and Clark asks her what she remembers, right? And she says that she doesn't remember much, but, and I've got the quote for you right here, Adam, so, and for the listener, so, because I think it's one of my favorite quotes from all of Smallville, and it's a great Klaana scene. "There was something I felt when I bit you. Warmth and love and overwhelming feeling of strength. I think for a moment I felt it was inside your heart, and I've never felt closer to someone in my entire life. I miss being with Clark." And then they kiss. So that was a wonderful scene, one of my favorite scenes in the entirety of the series, not just in this episode. So yeah, those are my three favorites. And of course, I loved two of your favorite scenes, Adam. So I will say that I won't fault you for either of the scenes you picked, because those are two great scenes too. So this whole episode, one of my favorite episodes. And yeah, those are my three favorite scenes.
See, and this is proof that I can accommodate. See that? So there you go.
Yes, I appreciate that, Adam. Or, I'm sorry, shoot, I did it again. My Earth 2 doppelganger.
Oh, stop it with this ridiculous attempt to make yourself not look desperate to talk about this episode.
Oh, my God.
All right, so that's it for that, and that's probably the last time you'll hear me utter a word about thirst. Next question.
All righty, well, our buddy Stephen Maverick Marshall, he's got three questions, but the first one...
He went to town. When he found out we were doing this, he went to town.
He did. Stephen is our most frequent question writer, I guess we could call it. So we always appreciate your questions.
Yeah, we should give him some kind of reward, like have him on the show or something. I don't know.
Huh. I wonder if that's in the plans, Adam.
It could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yes.
Maybe my doppelganger is planning that right now on Earth 2. I don't know.
In between
makeout sessions with his wife, Margot Robbie, but it's it. And that, sir, is how you do the whole Earth 2 joke.
We've announced that Steven's coming. I think we announced it on the show, actually. If we haven't, though, I'll say it. We can say it. Steven is going to come on for one of our Smallville episodes. Yeah. So we're very excited about that, Steven.
If anybody wants to come on our show, we'll start asking more questions.
And Steven likes the episode Thirst, so...
Well, I mean, listen, everybody has, you know, a moment of drunken regret. That's probably his, but we'll ask him when he gets on the show. you know, maybe he watched that one day when he was, you know, sprawled out on the floor after, a binge of night drinking. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
We'll find out when he comes on. We'll ask him.
Then you're going to have to talk about Thirst again, Adam.
Well,
so.
No, I don't have to go into specifics. I just ask him why he's so crazy he likes the episode. That's it. You know, but he's a, otherwise, aside from that, you know, staying on his character. He's a really nice guy, and he's a great fan, and we appreciate him. So what's his first question?
All right. Steven's first question is, what are your thoughts on the DC Beyond universe in live action? They could start with Batman Beyond, then a team up with Superman Beyond, which could evolve into Justice League Beyond. They could even have the Legion as part of the Beyond universe, even though the Legion exists in years into the future from Batman Beyond.
Well, all right. Where to start with this one? First of all, I definitely want a Batman Beyond. That's 100%. Do it. In fact, I'll give them a scenario. You know, Michael Keaton is looking very Batman Beyond Bruce Wayne-ish these days. A little younger still for that, but you could pull it off. And I would cast him as the elderly Bruce Wayne. And what I would do with that movie is have him mentoring Terry McGinnis, and he comes up with, you know, that Terry McGinnis, let's say, comes up against a version of the Scarecrow, or the Scarecrow of the future, or a Scarecrow wannabe, whatever the case may be. And so you have Bruce Wayne recounting an encounter with the Scarecrow from his past. And in the backstory to that, you could use Batman Forever and Batman and Robin as a hallucination of Batman under the fear toxin. And you can explain those movies away as a fear-induced hallucination. So you can keep it within the Burton Schumacher continuity if you want it, and simultaneously explain those two movies away. And that would make me very happy. So definitely do that with Michael Keaton. As for a Batman Beyond universe, I don't know that there was enough with Superman Beyond or JLA Justice League Beyond to really mine that concept or further it. See, the reason why I think Batman Beyond would work is because people are already so familiar with Batman, and you know, there's a love from the general audience towards Batman already, irregardless of whether they've watched cartoons or read comics or what have you. So it's easier to pull off a Batman Beyond. I think doing a Superman Beyond or a Justice League Beyond would be a little too much of a stretch, at least right now, you know, like right away. Start with Batman Beyond, maybe do a second Batman Beyond, or at the very least see how the concept of a Batman Beyond goes down with general audiences before you go down the expanded universe, beyond universe. My recommendation is yes to Batman Beyond. I'm not so hot on a Superman Beyond or a Justice League Beyond. I'd much rather see a Kingdom Come Superman than I would a Superman Beyond, personally. So that's my
opinion. I have a little bit of a different take on it. I'm sure Steven would love – I know Steven's a huge Michael Keaton Batman fan, so I'm sure he'd love for Michael Keaton to return to do that. For me, I'd set it in the DCEU. And, I mean, let's say – I would say this – Batman Beyond, in my opinion, should be the last film in the DCEU. This should be like this is the last thing they do. 10 years from now, when Affleck's really old, have him playing – you might still have to put some age makeup on him, but that's not hard to do. Have him playing old Bruce – cast somebody as Terry and do a Batman Beyond movie in the DCEU universe. DCEU universe, that's redundant, in the DCEU. And that's what I would do. And I'd have the movie, in terms of what I do with the movie, it's hard for me to think about what I would do with the movie, because, like, obviously, the thing that comes to my mind first is Batman Beyond: Return of the Joker, because I think that's the best thing that ever came out of Batman Beyond, and it's a phenomenal film. But I also, I mean, we've seen it already, but maybe they could do their own take on it somehow. But also, I think that movie works so well with the history of the whole show behind it,
yeah,
because you're sort of building up with that whole show.
Well, it's got the history of two shows behind it, right? It's got
It's got the history of three technically if you count the new Batman Avengers as a separate show and sort of I mean it's basically got the history of the entire DCAU behind it when you really think about it.
Right.
But
yeah.
that movie to me it works even better because you've spent so much time with Terry already and there's been this sort of lingering mystery of where the Joker is because you see this Joker gang and you're wondering the whole time what happened to the real Joker and right. Then you find out in that movie. But so I don't know how well that would work with just one Batman Beyond movie, but you could maybe do something like that, do something else. There's some other great villains on that show, so original villains to Batman Beyond on that show. For me, though, one must for that movie is I was never a big fan of Terry and Dana's relationship on Batman Beyond. Do Terry and Melanie, do Terry and Ten, and have them explore their relationship in that movie because I thought that relationship was fascinating and I really liked them on the Batman Beyond animated series. So that's one thing that I think would be something that I'd want to see. Otherwise, in terms of a Superman Beyond or a Justice League Beyond movie. You're right. In the animated series Batman Beyond, they didn't do too much with that. I mean, but at the same time, they could always flesh it out even further in the film, in the live action film. So, I mean, you could start out with what they established in the DCAU and then sort of build on it. So I think that's possible. In terms of having Legion around in a Batman Beyond universe, I'm going to pass on that idea just because I feel like you could also do a Legion movie and have it set in the 31st century.
If we're going to do that, then I'd rather just a Legion movie.
Exactly.
I'm not opposed. Look, I'm not opposed to your idea of setting it within the DC Films universe.
Yeah.
However, I think, you know, your idea of Affleck doing it is a pipe dream because, like I said, I've been converted to the belief of he ain't coming back. He barely wants to do it now, and you want to get him back 10 years from now? That's a far-fetched hope. The reason why I brought up Michael Keaton is not just because I have a nostalgic fondness for his Batman, but he said in interviews that Batman is a role he'd happily play again. If the right circumstances came along, you could convince Michael Keaton to do it. I don't think the same could be said for Affleck. So that's why I'm totally excluding put it this way. If a Batman Beyond movie happens, and I think it will at some point, like it's inevitable, it's going to be one of two cases. It's either going to be part of this supposed quote-unquote Elseworlds line of DC films like they've been talking about, or it's going to happen when they've exhausted the next Matt Reeves' trilogy or whatever, and then they're like, well, what haven't we done? And the answer would be Batman Beyond. So
yeah, I just think that's the better choice to do it that way because I think Batman Beyond, as we both sort of alluded to, it works best when you have a history with that version of the of Batman.
But then it would have to be whoever. Like I said, I'm of the belief now, and more and more as time passes, I'm of the belief that either we've seen Affleck's last turn as Batman, or we will see it, if and when Flashpoint gets going. So,
well, fine. I disagree with you on that. Yeah. But with whoever, I believe it's still going to be Ben. But with whoever is Batman,
they could do it within that universe. But I think it's a scenario that they're going to do it as a separate entity once. My wish of Michael Keaton is that, and even though he said he'd be willing to return, I think it'd be a clever move on their part. I don't know if that doesn't mean I think they're necessarily going to do it. I think when a Batman Beyond movie happens, it's going to be after they've done Matt Reeves' trilogy or whatever he wants to do, and it's going to be a totally separate entity from the current connected DC Films offerings. That's my personal opinion on what will happen, not necessarily what I want to happen, but what I think ultimately will happen. So that's my take.
Okay. Steven's next question.
Yeah.
Is, if DC/WB decides to reset with Superman, what would be your idea for a reboot? I think it's a given if they do it, they won't retouch on the origin again.
Okay. Reboot. That's what he's asking for, about, right?
Yeah.
Now, I wonder if he means, does that exclude, like, let's say they say, sorry, Cavill, you're not coming back. Is that what he's at? Is that?
That's the way I interpreted it, yeah.
Well, what I would do is, what I would do could work for or with or without Cavill. I think ultimately what you have to do is come back with an established Superman that's already Superman. What I would do in terms of the origin, if you have to touch on it for the sake of, just because, then I would do it, or if it's a story necessity, what I would do is I would do it as like an opening montage, like an opening credit montage.
Yeah.
I would do it as that, like flashbacks, but you know what I mean? An opening montage. So it's not peppered throughout the film. You get it over with right as they're, WB Pictures, DC Film Presents, blah blah, all that stuff. Do it there in a quick intro montage, and deal with it, get it done. It doesn't have to be overly elaborated, because everybody and their mother and their grandmother and their great grandmother and their 1,000-year-old ancestors know who the hell Superman is. So at this point, we don't need to revisit the origin in a full lock, stock and barrel, show it all scenario. So I think an opening credit montage would work. As to what I would do with the story, look, one of the things they have to do with Superman going forward is get the budget down, because the budget's on Superman Returns and Man of Steel, the budgets were ridiculously high. You got to get the budget within the $120 to $150 million range, and it can be done because Guardians of the Galaxy, which had, CGI coming out of its ears, the whole thing was CGI, pretty much. They managed to make that film for $140 million. So there's no excuse why you can't do a Superman film for around the same ballpark of a price range. I mean, I just watched Jumanji, right, over the weekend. Some of those environments were all CGI. The animals were all CGI, like that. And they did that for the studio that did that, I think it was Sony, did that for $90 million. So you can't tell me that a Superman movie can't be made for $120 or $140 million. So that's the first thing they have to do. To facilitate that, I think they should go with, if they do Brainiac, because I know a lot of people want Brainiac. If they do Brainiac, for the love of God, there's this great thing that's called prosthetic makeup. And it looks really good when you have a good prosthetic makeup house doing the job. If you're gonna do Brainiac, do prosthetic makeup with enhanced CGI, not the whole friggin' ball of wax CGI. That's the first step. If you're gonna do Brainiac, to maybe save your ass even further in terms of budget, I would almost do Metallo first. And to make a good, the Superman movie that I'm envisioning would probably have, I know it's an element of an origin. You don't have to use the origin elements if you don't want to, but Superman Secret Origin is one of them that I would pull from Jeff Johns, and the Superman story that inspired the DC animated movie with Brainiac. What was that?
I think the comic is called Superman Brainiac, but the movie is called Superman Unbound.
Okay, so Superman Brainiac and Superman Secret Origins, both by Jeff Johns, I'd use elements from those. And if we are talking about bringing back Henry Cavill, then in interviews with Henry Cavill, he keeps talking about, because they keep asking him, well, how are you going to resolve the Clark Kent issue in a solo Superman movie? And he keeps pointing to Rebirth, the comics. And there's a comic just prior to the Rebirth issue. It's Lois and Clark. It's Superman, Lois and Clark. I think you could do elements of that in a Superman movie with a full-fledged Superman. Like, because in that story, spoiler, Superman has a kid with Lois Lane, right? But it's not the bastard child out of nowhere where Superman took off for 5 years afterwards, like Bryan Singer did it. It's an actual proper way to do Superman with a kid, and I think if the story is right, it could work. So either way, whether you want to include a kid for Cavill Superman, or you just want to explain away the Clark Kent debacle and fix that part of continuity, there's ways to use Superman, Lois and Clark, the comic, the 8-part comic, as a way around that. So those are my suggestions for a reboot and for keeping Cavill. So that's what I see.
Okay. Yeah. For me, it's like I don't understand where this idea is coming from. That, well, I understand where it's coming from, but I think people are getting too worried that Cavill is going to leave. I really am not worried that they're going to try and reboot Superman without Cavill. I don't really think that's likely to happen. But so I guess the way I'm going to answer this question is, when they eventually do reboot, I mean, eventually they're obviously going to reboot him. I think we're still going to get a few more movies with Cavill, though. So the way I'm going to answer this question is how I think they're going to reboot him 10 years down the line or whatever. I agree. I wouldn't go retouch on the origin again. We've seen it multiple times now, and I don't think there's any need to do that. For me, I take inspiration. I mean, my favorite Superman comic of all time is Superman for All Seasons. So I'd sort of take the vibe of that. I'd sort of take a lot of the elements I love from Smallville, and I'd try to incorporate the sort of feel that Smallville has. I'd cast someone as Lex Luthor, who is very cold and calculating, much like Michael Rosenbaum. My first choice for the next big bad of a Superman film is currently Brainiac. If they do him in one of the Cavill films, then I would say I probably don't need to see him again in the first film of the reboot. But if we still haven't gotten him by that point, he would still be my first choice for the villain of said film. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that, and I would spend a lot of time with Clark at the Daily Planet as a reporter. That's also something I'd like to see more of. So I'd spend a lot of time there, and I'd also make sure that there was a fair amount of time spent in Smallville where we see Clark there too. So that's sort of some things that I'd like to see, I guess.
And that's the cool thing about Secret Origins as well, Jordan, is it has a lot of Smallville time, or flashes back to Smallville time. So
okay, yeah. I think you were telling me about that. Yeah.
Have you not read Secret Origin?
No, I have not.
Oh, that's a definite must read.
Alrighty. I mean, that's one of the things. Obviously, Superman for All Seasons was heavy inspiration for Smallville.
I mean, Superman for All Seasons was kind of an origin, but not really.
Right. But that's one of the reasons I love Superman for All Seasons so much, is because it has a similar vibe to Smallville. So I feel like I'd probably love Secret Origin too, if you're saying that it has a very similar vibe as well.
Right. I totally forgot about For All Seasons, but like I said, For quote unquote origin moments without going full blown origin,
yeah,
definitely look to Superman for All Seasons and Secret Origins as inspiration. Secret Origins was written by Jeff Johns, so was Superman Brainiac, and Jeff Loeb wrote Superman for All Seasons. I don't know about you, but if I'm the people at Warner Bros. And if one of you is listening, there's rumors that you may demote Jeff Johns, which I think is ridiculously stupid. Because whatever your problems are, aren't his fault. But if you're going to demote him, at least borrow from his work that is so widely acclaimed in the comic book industry. And those two Superman stories I mentioned. He also did a Superman and the Legion arc, which is fantastic, that you know, I just want to point out. At least if you're going to demote him from the film side, at least use his works that are so well loved by fans as their inspiration. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. I'm not too worried that I know people are sort of getting up in arms about him possibly getting demoted. All that Variety article said was that his role, quote unquote, and this is direct quote because I've been saying this to so many people, this is exactly what the article said, may evolve. We don't know what that means. All it said was his role. That's not definitive.
Yeah, I'm saying if they demote him.
Okay.
If they demote him, they're stupid.
Okay, I just got you. I'm just clarifying.
Yeah, I'm saying if they demote him, they're stupid, in my opinion. The problem was, you know, we've gone through the problem. You doubled down on a director whose movies are divisive, and as much as Jordan and I like BVS, the backlash from that is what you can point to. And there's a great article. If I find it, I'll link it to you, Jordan. That points out ways that the reception or the perception by you know a portion of the audience on BVS hindered JL at the box office, and that's factual. You know, as much as we like BVS, you know, I'm a realistic fan that can say, yeah, hey, there's a bunch of people that don't like BVS, and those people didn't come out to the theater. Let's hope they come out on when it comes out on, you know, because the people that have seen Justice League, most of them have enjoyed it, specifically Superman's portrayal. Hopefully those people will tell their friends, you know, if the people that saw it weren't so keen on BVS, maybe they'll tell their friends, look, it's not like BVS at all. It's not really like BVS. Check it out. And hopefully more people will check it out. But my point is, Geoff Johns was not, like, his first true influence on DC films, part of it was seen with Wonder Woman, because he co-wrote that with Patty Jenkins and Alan Heinberg. But a real test of his influence will be Aquaman. So you can't blame Geoff Johns for the perceived, quote unquote, problems with Justice League. So, and in my opinion, so use his work for the. What I'm saying is, he's written at least a minimum of three great Superman stories, one of which for sure Jordan hasn't read. I'm going to guess he probably hasn't read the Brainiac one either.
I have not read the Brainiac one, but I've seen Superman Unbound.
Okay,
I've seen the anime.
Okay, so there you go. I'll give you at least that. My point is, use his work when it relates to Superman because it's brilliant. And that's my word of advice to WB.
Hey, all righty. All right, well, Steven's last question is, it seems extremely likely that Batman will be recast for Matt Reeves' Batman. I would say with that, even the case, they'll likely recast the other roles too, like Gordon, Alfred, etc. Any thoughts on the casting for these? Also, if they did recast the Joker, who would you cast in the role?
Oh, boy. Now he wants us to play casting director. Jesus. All right. If I'm with Steven, to me, we ain't gonna, in my opinion, and I know you and I disagree, but we're not gonna see Ben Affleck in Matt Reeves' Batman film. If we do, I'd be happy to be wrong because, you know, everybody knows I'd love him in the role. So I'd be happy to be wrong. I don't think I will be, but so if you know, let's say that happens. So let's say Batman is recast. If they go the prequel route where let's say it's a prequel to, you know, it's a 20 years, somewhere in the 20 years before BVS, right? Then I don't think there's a need to recast J.K. Simmons or Jeremy Irons. But if you're asking me, okay, if they have to, all right, well, okay, so if they go for for Gordon, I have two choices. I'm going to go with the obvious choice, that everybody's going to choose, because it's a good, it's frankly, it's a good casting. And it's the guy, why is his name escaping me now, from Breaking Bad. What the hell is his name? Come on. He played Gordon in Batman Year One. What's his name, Jordan? What's that?
Cranston?
Yeah, Bryan Cranston. That's it. So that's the obvious choice that everybody and their mother will say, and I'll echo that sentiment because it's a good choice. But
I just watched one of his movies as part of my annual Christmas marathon. The only thing on my annual Christmas marathon, actually, that's not DC related, and he's in it. So
what movie was it? Just out of curiosity.
One of my favorite movies ever. It's actually a recent movie, but it's already one of my favorites ever. Why Him? Did you see that movie?
Oh, with that jackass, Ashton Kutcher.
No, with James Franco.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was... the good thing about this episode is I got to call Ashton Kutcher a jackass.
What you were thinking of? You were thinking of a different movie?
I was thinking of a different movie, but it doesn't have Bryan Cranston. It actually has... he's dating I guess it's the boss's daughter, but it's
Shoot. I know exactly what movie you're thinking about. I think it's called My Boss's Daughter, actually.
Possibly, but it doesn't have Bryan Cranston. But my point.
No.
Point
that's being, a funny movie. That is a funny jackass, movie, too, in my though. Opinion.
But anyway. so Bryan Cranston would be the obvious option. My other Jim Gordon favorite for me personally is Kurt Russell.
Okay.
Because. If you look at him in Guardians of the Galaxy with that with that full beard and white mustache, you take the beard part off and leave the mustache and you got Jim Gordon. and I've always thought of him as Jim Gordon, but this is before he was in Guardians 2, by the way. I've had him as a choice way back in the early days, just as Batman Begins was going into pre-production. I've always thought he'd make a good Gordon. In terms of Alfred, if you're going to go with the idea that Alfred in the past has had some British, military intelligence or training or some sort of that, you know what would be great for Alfred? Pierce Brosnan. I think he'd be a fantastic Alfred.
I think I heard Rick Shue bring that up recently.
He heard it, and I actually was thinking about it. I'm like, I said, let me marinate on this and think about it. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, damn it, I'd be so down with that. So those are my choices. I don't have a backup for Alfred because I don't know. But those would be my choices. What about you, Jordan?
Okay, did you have one for the Joker?
Oh, the Joker? Shit. Who could play a good Joker? I'm not going to say Willem Dafoe, that would be a pipe dream, and that's never going to happen. Especially now that he's Volko in the DC films. I don't want them to recast the Joker, and I don't think they have to be honest with you. I want more of this Joker. I want to see more of him. So, and that's the thing. He's barely, to this point in the films, he's barely had zero interaction with Batman, aside from the car chase. But he's never had actually on-screen scenes with Batman. So I don't think it'll matter. And let me say this. While they may recast roles for the specific Batman film of Matt Reeves, one role they are not recasting, and I can almost guarantee that, is Harley Quinn and the Joker, because they're so inexplicably tied together that right now, with Harley Quinn being such a hot commodity, they're going to explore that further. So I don't think the Joker is going anywhere.
All right. I'm not sure I can answer this question, Steven, and I'm sorry. It's just because that I don't feel that it is likely that, first of all, I don't feel that it's extremely likely that Ben is going to get recast. But even if he is, I think that they're going to keep the rest of the... I mean, I don't see any reason why they're not going to keep the rest of the cast. I mean, they're not rebooting Batman, even if they recast Affleck, which I don't even think that's going to happen. So I really don't see this as a... personally, I don't see this as something that's very likely to happen. I just don't see any way that even if they did recast Ben, you still got the DCAU going on. You still got, like you brought up, Adam, you still got Harley and Joker in other movies. They're not. I really don't see them throwing out the rest of this universe. I mean, you're not. I don't see them.
What's the saying that Bill from Batman and Femme has? You don't have to throw the
baby out with the bathwater. Yeah,
exactly. So just give me.
Yeah. I know we've got the Elseworlds line now, but even if they did recast Ben, they're not gonna have a separate Batman universe. They're not gonna have a separate Batman universe when already you know they're already setting up a Batman universe within the DCEU. I mean, you've got Nightwing, you've got Batgirl, you've got Gotham City Sirens. They're not blowing this up.
Here's what I think it'll ultimately be like, and again, they'll be better films because Matt Reeves. And that's all you have to say. But think about continuity, like essentially, you know, going from Batman Returns to Batman Forever, in the sense that,
yes,
whether I believe it or not, whether I can suspend disbelief enough, the idea was that Val Kilmer was Michael Keaton.
Yeah, and Tommy Lee Jones was Billy Dee Williams.
And that bastard George Clooney was the first. Was the continuation of Michael Keaton's Batman, even though my mind can't wrap my head around it. It is what it is. So,
yeah.
in those films, which were soft reboots, if you will, kind of, they kept Alfred and Gordon.
Yeah, I mean that's a great example. Yeah. And even if it doesn't even have to be that drastic a change in tone, like it could be. I mean, look at Marion Cotillard. Maggie Gyllenhaal taking over for Katie Holmes in The Dark Knight. It's like it's just a I still think, as far as I'm concerned, Ben is still Batman. But
yeah,
even
in,
if
in
they
your
did,
dream world, yeah, I know he's still Batman. I feel so bad for the day when that Variety article comes out announcing new Batman.
If it becomes official that Ben is leaving the role, I will fully admit that I was wrong.
I'm gonna do something nice for you. I'm gonna send you a custom made Kleenex box with Kristen Kruk as Lana Lang on it. For when that occasion happens. How about that? Sound good?
Oh my god. That's very nice of you, Adam.
All right, good.
Fortunately, I don't think that day is going to come, though. But even if it does, and I'm saying even if it does, I don't think there's any way they're recasting the other roles. It's just going to be a one role being recast, and that's it.
And since Jordan mentioned Maggie Gyllenhaal, my personal opinion is that her real-life brother, Jake, is going to be the man in the cowl for Matt Reeves. But we'll see if I'm right on that.
Alrighty. Moving on to we brought him up earlier on this episode in terms of having him back on to talk about Superboy.
Right.
You like
how I did that unintentional segue. And believe me, it wasn't intentional. I was just trying to kill time because Jordan was unprepared.
you planted the seeds whether you meant to or not.
Yeah, exactly. So. I'm a good gardener. I've never gardened a day in my life, folks. All right, what's the question?
you came up with the non-dirty analogy.
If it's a gardening question, I can't help you, Sam.
Sam asks, do you think Superboy will be on the Titans series?
Yes, in fact, I do. Here's how I think it's going to go down. I don't think we're going to see it in the first season. Because there's already a ton of characters that they're talking about. I think that's going to be a second season addition. And the reason why I say that is, a couple reasons. One, the Superboy that we've seen, they've sort of done the Kal-El Superboy version on Smallville, and it was ever so brief. What's that?
Oh, yeah. Sort of.
No, okay, they did it, but what I'm saying is it was a brief a brief appearance. It was very like it was very you know what was it an episode two episodes?
It was only a couple episodes,
right,
but
yeah.
Well, you count if you because if you, it's a lot more though if you count like when he was growing up with Tess take care of him, aging rapidly, so then it
yeah no no but what I'm saying is they really didn't delve into his comic backstory and stuff.
I'm gonna fight you on that a little bit, Adam, because they did they had the whole thing with him being a clone of Lex and Clark, and they did, and then in the season 11 comics they actually had him with the Titans, and we got more of
right,
them.
Right, but what I'm saying is what we saw was not actually a full blown adaptation. Is what I'm saying. I mean, there were elements of it, of the history and all that, but it wasn't as fleshed out. Well, my point is. We saw him briefly on Smallville, and I thought it worked. The other Superboy that Sam knows all too well that we saw in live action was Clark Kent's time.
I was assuming though Sam was referring to Kon-El. No, he is.
But what I'm saying is, aside from Kon-El in his brief appearance on Smallville in live action, the only other Superboy we've seen in live action is Clark Kent before he became Superman. So to me, there's a lot of backstory and a lot of story in general for that character still to mine in live action. The other thing is, if you look at the Young Justice animated series, which again we'll cover down the road as everything crystallizes with season three. But if you look at that, one of the best components for me was the Superboy. Parts.
Oh yeah,
it was fantastic. And also, if you look at Geoff Johns's run of the Teen Titans comic, which is a great run, if you haven't read it, which I'm guessing again that's a no in your column, Jordan.
It is a no.
Right. it's a great run, as is anything Geoff Johns does. But his early run was heavily focused on Kon-El discovering that he's a clone of Superman and Lex and dealing with the repercussions and the fallout and of that. And there were some great stories told there. So, given all that, and given the fact that John Jones. Yes, Geoff Johns is secretly the Martian Manhunter. No.
That's a better reveal than Hank Henshaw on
shit,
Supergirl.
Man, I'm doing it all today. I'm giving Warner Brothers Pictures advice. I'm planting seeds apparently to a garden that's never gonna grow. I'm writing better scripts for Supergirl. But given that Geoff Johns is heavily involved with the streaming service and particularly Titans. I definitely think he's going to bring in or advocate for bringing in Superboy. And there's a lot of potential there. And look, at this point, the show already has its Batman connection in Dick Grayson, Robin / Nightwing. There's speculation that they're going to bring in Donna Troy via some of the casting sides that went out. So they'd have, if they did that, they'd have their Wonder Woman closure. But being that they have a Batman representative, they're going to want a representative of the Superman family, and I think it's a definite that Superboy is going to come up. It's just a matter of time. I think it'll be second season. That would be a great cliffhanger to end the first season with Cadmus and all that, all the backstory there, and then in the season two premiere lead in with Superboy and explore that further.
All right.
What about you? What do you think?
I agree with you that I think we're going to see him, but in a slightly different way. What I think is going to happen is I agree that we're not going to see him in the first season. I don't even think we're going to see him in I don't think that's even going to be like the NTs at the end of the first season. What I think is
going to
happen.
Oh, I just said they could do that if they want him. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I see. I personally don't think that's going to happen though. What I think is going to happen is that very soon on into Titans, they're going to wind up establishing that it is connected to the Arrowverse. And what's going to happen, obviously, we already have Cadmus on Supergirl. And for a long time, I thought that they were going to introduce Kal-El on Supergirl. I still think that's going to happen. I think they're going to introduce Kal-El in not this season of Supergirl, but next season of Supergirl, which is going to be concurrent with season two of Titans. Then I think Superboy is going to join the Titans for season three of Titans.
So you're playing it as if the Titans universe is way more connected to the Arrow CW verse than I think it will be.
Well, I guess so. I didn't know that. I didn't know what your feelings were on that.
Yeah,
but
no, I think it's going to be totally separate.
Okay. And
here's why. They're
I hope you're wrong.
They're already using Arrow villains with different actors.
But it could be on – that is true. I realize we actually didn't – we should have talked about that cast with that casting news, but I think we forgot. But
I think we mentioned it. I'm not sure.
I don't think we mentioned it. But in any case, you're right that they have done that. But that being said, it could be – it doesn't have to be on Earth 1 in the Arrowverse. Like, frankly, if what I'm saying does come to pass, it would make more sense even if it was on Earth 38 in the Arrowverse.
Here's the other thing, the reason why I don't think it'll happen, because I disagree that he's going to be introduced on Supergirl. I really do. Here's why. Because Mon-El, whether we like it or not, is the show stand-in for Superman/Superboy.
Do you not like Mon-El?
I don't dislike him. I believe that he's a stand-in. Him along with the whole movie rights thing, Mon-El being there and the movie rights thing is the reason why we haven't seen more of Superman. And again, they're not going to bring – and the beauty of Mon-El is you can – because he has similar powers to Superman and Kara. But let's be honest with you. The general audience doesn't give a shit. Three quarters of the average general audience, I'm not talking about Supergirl fandom, I'm talking about general audience, doesn't give a shit about Mon-El, right? So you can bring him on and he won't upstage Supergirl one bit. You bring in Superman or you do an extended arc with Superboy, he's going to upstage Kara, and they're not going to do that on their own show. So that's why I don't think you're going to see him in Supergirl. I think he'll be brought on exclusively for Titans. I think the whole thing is going to be separate from the CW universe. Unless the only way they're all connected is if eventually the TV division ends up, you know, breaking their pact with the CW and moving everything to the streaming service, all their shows. Then maybe. But as of right now, I don't think it's going to be connected at all.
Okay. Well, you don't even think it's going to be on a completely separate Earth that
no, I think there is zero connection. Zero.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you're wrong. I hope you're wrong, but I guess we'll see, man. Okay.
And one of the main reasons too, I'll be honest with you, if they bring in Kid Flash and it's going to be Iris's annoying little brother, and that gives them a modicum of chance of even referencing that stupid Iris West. I don't want it at all. No.
You and your hatred for Iris West, dude.
Look, you know I have problems with the way Lana was written on Smallville. Not the actress, the way she was written. You know, we've talked about this.
Yeah. No.
I think she's worse than Lana ever was.
Well, to me, almost everybody's worse than Lana was, because Lana was amazing.
But you know that when I say that, there's merit to it, because there are legitimate moments of Lana that I couldn't stand. But so.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well. Okay. Next up, let's see. Well, Steven's got a question that we sort of both answered on Facebook, but I'll give him another shout out. This is a fourth question, I guess, from him. This isn't really a question. This is just a question regarding more so the podcast, but I'll go ahead and read it anyway. We sort of already answered it for him on Facebook, though, but I'll answer it for – we can answer it for the rest of the listeners here, anybody who didn't see it on Facebook.
Yeah.
You always ask guests what their favorite Batman film is. Maybe you should start asking about Superman, too.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. When we do Superman-centric episodes – The question I will be asking is who's that particular guest's favorite iteration of a live action Superman.
Yeah, we just haven't had any guests yet to talk about a Superman, really.
Been a Superman centric episode, and I don't want to ask, you know, we've done the TV shows, so we've done Supergirl, but I don't want to be like, Rahul, ignore Supergirl for a second because there's only been three of them. Which one is your favorite? You know, that would be a disservice to Supergirl, so that's why I didn't do that.
We've only done one. I guess we've really only done one Superman focused episode, and it was Man of Steel, and we didn't have a guest on.
Right.
So, well, Batman v Superman. I guess we could have asked David on our Batman v Superman.
Okay, that was my error. I should have asked David that. But you'll find out our thoughts on our favorite Superman in the next episode, or in the episode you've already heard it.
Yeah, it'll probably be before this episode. Yeah. So
you've already heard our personal preferences for Superman,
but not our favorite. Not our favorite Superman movie, we haven't said. But right. I think we both say on the Man of Steel episode that was our favorite Superman movie?
I think we did, so we spoiled that too. Well, but we will start asking that question, Steven. No worries.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And then Steven put on Facebook, I don't know if you saw this, he said, well, I'd be happy to answer both. So, yes, when you come on, Steven, to talk Smallville, we would definitely ask.
Yeah. Yes, we'll ask you both Batman and Superman.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Adam. What's up?
No, next question.
This one's from Adam Kurt Morris. This isn't really a question, but I guess it's more something to speculate or to sort of discuss our thoughts on.
Yeah.
He says that I really want them to keep Cavill, but I want to see a big screen Brainiac or Mongol. Maybe him getting stuck on Warworld and the Lantern Corps comes and saves him. So I guess we could talk about what we think of that idea.
Okay, repeat. Okay, I need to get the full breadth of the situation. What is that?
Basically, what he's asking is what we would think of a big screen movie with. Where Superman is fighting either Brainiac or he's on Warworld, where he's on Mongol's Warworld, and he winds up having to get saved by the Land Corps come and help save him, basically.
Okay, here's the thing. Look, on paper, and as a hardcore fan, I'll put a diaper on and piss my pants if I see that in the theater. Of pure joy. The problem is, I just finished earlier saying my belief is they got to tighten up the budgets, right? Can you do all of that with the Lantern Corps and Superman and Mongol and Warworld? Can you do all that for less than $200 million? Because if you can, then great.
Oh, I think they can, and here's why I think they can, and I brought it up in a previous episode. Now, I agree with you, Adam. I forgot to mention it earlier. I agree with you that they should tighten up the budgets
of these films. It's imperative. It's imperative.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's absurd that they're spending $300 million on a film. And the reason why, and I think I brought this up in a previous episode.
And here's the thing, though, before you continue.
Yeah, sure.
Even if you take off the porn mustache removal of $25 million, what are we at? That's still how much was it? 275?
Yeah.
Without the 20, is my math right? 275?
Yeah, your math right there. Yeah.
That's still ridiculous.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's the thing that just makes no sense to me. How is it that now, obviously, the DC TV shows don't look as good as the movies, but they still look pretty damn good.
Of course.
How is it that they can do that per episode? And obviously, the episodes are shorter. But even though it is an exponentially smaller number, you're talking about per episode they spend like a few million dollars compared to a movie that's not even – like Justice League is slightly more than twice as long as – no, sorry. Justice League is slightly longer than two Arrowverse episodes. If the two Arrowverse episodes together spend, say, $10 million for two episodes, I don't understand how – Justice League spends $300 million.
I don't get
You could make a movie for $50 million that looks great. Like, I don't understand. It's ridiculous to me. So I agree with you, but I think that you could You could easily, I think you could easily have the Lantern Corps, maybe not a whole movie with the Lantern Corps, but you could easily have a cheap, you could easily do that not for not very expensive.
I mean, you can have a couple of them come in instead of the whole.
Yeah. But you don't need Mogo. You don't need Mogo.
No, we don't need that because they kind of did that in Guardians of the Galaxy too. Because, spoiler, Ego, who is in the movie universe, Star-Lord's father, is a living planet. So we don't need that again.
Yeah, no, I was just joking. I was just joking about Mogo, but I'm
serious. They don't need to do that.
Actually, Mogo probably wouldn't be that expensive because he's just a planet, so they can easily CGI a planet.
Would you not agree that at least for the next Superman movie, and maybe the one after that, it has to be more contained, and either feature just Brainiac or just Metallo. For now, just like let's get everybody back on board, and then, you know, again, focus on pure solo movies, not these big mashups right now. Focus on more intimate solo stories with one villain per manageable villains. Do a couple of those kind of solo movies. Get everybody back on board, right? You know. Get your foundations back under you, and then later on maybe we'll talk about these big epics that Adam is talking about and all this. But for now, like I said, either Superman versus Brainiac or Superman versus Metallo, and let's get the ship. You know, let's get everything. You know, let's set everything right before we go. You know, crazy again.
Yeah, I agree. I agree to a certain extent. I think that I mean we know they're focusing more on standalone movies now, and I really want a solo super. I really want Cavill to get a solo Superman film.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Maybe if they just did a Lantern Corps cameo, that would be fine. But I really want it to be
But in the next movie, nobody else. I just want Superman, just Superman.
Oh, I just want solo Superman. So that's sort of how I feel. I wouldn't be opposed to Lantern Corps coming in, but I don't think it's likely, and it probably wouldn't be my first choice for this film.
Yeah, because you got to remember, they got to get Lantern back in his own footing before they can even dream of doing anything with combining him with another character or in another Justice League or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, unless that was the introduction of the Lantern Corps, and then. Into the DCU. Anyway, there's a way they could do it, but I think it's unlikely, and I think preferably for me, I'd want them to just probably keep it focused on Superman. However, I'd be fine if they had him fight. I mean, obviously Brainiac's my first choice, but I'd be down to see Mongol as the villain too.
He's another one of those. It's Darkseid / Steppenwolf all over again. Like, they gotta go smaller first before they can get back to Mongol. A Mongo type level.
Okay, level. All
right. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, basically,
what I'm saying, Adam, is this: Superman needs to take a page out of Star Wars book and go solo. I had to do that.
Yeah.
You know, Han Solo spinning. You didn't get that.
What's that?
I said they have to. They gotta pull a Star Wars and go solo. Get it? Han Solo spinoff.
I got it.
Okay, nobody laughed. Well, I thought it was funny.
It was clever.
We need a laugh track on this goddamn show, so somebody laughs at my jokes.
It was clever. It was clever, Adam. It was. I agree with you. I feel like with Mongol, if you did War World, that would take Superman off world a lot. And like I said, I sort of want to see a lot of him at the Daily Planet and. In Smallville. So if you could still do that with Mongo, I'd be down. I don't know. I'd be okay with Mongo. He, like I said, he wouldn't be my first choice. My first choice would be, I have mixed feelings on it. I guess is my overall thing. I Brainiac definitely. Brainiac, I would love to see. He's my first choice for the next villain. But Mongo, I think you could do. He probably wouldn't be my first choice though. So that's my take.
Yeah.
Ready to move on?
Yeah.
All righty.
Let's go.
Got a Twitter question from @philosopop, who asks, Dial H for Hero is one of the strongest attempts at interactivity and having readers contribute to the universe, as long as copyright, etc. stays with the publisher. Okay, I didn't really get what he meant by that last part, but
okay, so basically, Dial H for Hero, like basically fans contributed to the story in a way.
I understand. I know what that is. I see. Well, I don't understand what he's saying about the copyright thing.
Well, as long as the, you know, to keep the stories with the publisher, so.
Oh, okay, okay. I see. So I guess he's wondering what we think about Dial H for Hero.
Well, I guess so. And I'm glad you liked it, but I didn't like it. I read, because my usual rule of thumb is I'll give a story or like a comic. Three issues or a full story arc to impress me. And if it doesn't, I'm not buying it, because there's so much more. There's so many good books out there that I just got no time to waste with something I'm not digging. And I read, you know, three or four. I can't remember how many issues I read of Dial H, but I didn't like it.
You read the New 52 series or...
Yeah, whatever the most recent one was, I think it was, but I didn't care for it, and it got canceled. So there's a lot of people that didn't either. I do agree that it'd be cool if fans had input into stories. I'd go further just to say is like, and by that I don't mean phone in or tweet in this case, whether a character should live or die, because then you have the problem of DC wanting to reverse that decision eventually. So I wouldn't do it that way either. You know how they have these, like the annuals, Jordan, or the showcase issues where they showcase new talent?
Yeah, the new talent showcase.
Right. I would do something like that where I would take submissions, story submissions from fans, like outlines or whatever.
Yeah.
And the best ones, like the winners, would be either featured in an annual, one of the annual titles, or one of these showcase kind of titles. I would do it that way.
That's not a bad idea at all.
But I did not like Dial H for Hero. I'm sorry. I'm glad this listener liked it, but I didn't care for it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on
Yeah, I didn't read Dial H for Hero, but I mean, I'm familiar with what it is. I think it's kind of a cool concept, but you know, I have no, since I haven't read it, I can't say anything more than that. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, me too. I'm glad you enjoyed it though. Definitely.
Cool.
Alrighty, we're down to our last question, Adam.
All right. What's the last question?
Alrighty, so from @Travis_156 on Twitter, right. Travis Hines, who of course is the DC Daily Drop, DC TV guy over there. He reviews the DC TV over there, and he's going to be coming on our show in not long, so we're excited to have him on. So.
And I got to give him a shout out because he's from Canada, like me, and he also, his favorite team is the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he's got good taste. In hockey teams, and he's also got good taste in podcasts because he likes ours. So
he's got good taste in TV too because he loves Smallville too.
I'm not gonna argue that. Now, the question is, does he like Thirst? That's gonna be the rule. All right. Okay. What's the question?
What are your thoughts on potential crossover storylines for next year? I've been saying since Invasion that they need to film the crossover in the summer while the shows are on break. Would make it a lot easier for actor availability and getting the cast of every show in there.
Ideas for crossovers for next year. Well, the good news is they don't pay me to write for them, so I don't have to come up with an answer for this. But because here's the thing. This last one was so good that I don't know how they're going to top it. I'll be honest with you. I really don't know. What I will say is, at least what I want from the episode, I do have a couple of wants. Whatever they do, I want more Martian Manhunter.
Yes.
That's number one.
I'm with
number two, I want Superman to be a part of it.
Yep.
Like this is like big end of the world level shit happening here. And I love Supergirl, but really? No Superman?
Well, to be fair, it made sense this year because it was set on Earth 1. So, and she was already on Earth 1 because of the wedding. So it makes sense to me that Martian
Manhunter... All right, so make it Earth 1 Super... I mean, there's got to be a Kal-El in Earth 1.
Oh, no, but that's not what I want. I don't want Earth 1 Kal-El. I want Earth 38 Kal-El.
Why? If it's just... Tyler Hoechlin, why, what's the matter? What's the...
Well, because I want the dynamic. I want Supergirl and Superman's dynamic.
Bring Earth... What number is it? 38? 39?
38. Yeah, 30.
Whatever Earth number it is, I don't give a shit what number it is.
Well, it's Earth 38. It's Earth 38 because Superman was invented in 1938.
Oh, okay. I didn't put that together. Hey, way to go, Supergirl people, for doing that. good job. No, okay. Then bring in. I don't care what if it's Earth 38. Bring him in.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying this year it made sense story-wise why he wasn't there, although I would have liked to see him as well.
All right, but come on. The Dominators, you could have had really?
That one would have made – that one they didn't – here's the thing. Last year's crossover, it made sense why he wasn't there because you're right. I mean, last year's crossover, it didn't make sense because they called Supergirl to come. Yeah. So it's like they called for her help. This year's crossover, they didn't call her because something bad was happening. She just came over for the wedding, and then something bad happened to occur. So
yeah, okay.
That's the difference there.
All right, yeah. No, but yeah, bring him on. I want to see it. I want to see it. So those are the two things I want. In terms of what the actual plot's going to be, I have no idea. I don't know how they're going to top it, but.
And what are your thoughts on them filming it in the summer, perhaps?
If as long as all the other shows are already, the question is he talking when the actors are on break?
Yes. Or, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a great idea. It's never gonna happen because those people aren't gonna want to come in and work when they're on holiday, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like practically, from a logistics standpoint, it probably makes a lot of sense because you're right. They wouldn't have to worry about filming separate episodes of each show.
Yeah.
But trying to get an individual, I don't care what profession you're in, to work when they're on scheduled holidays is non-existent.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Adam, though. I sort of... A lot of times I think that I don't know all the logistics of how this works, but I think that a lot of the TV actors, like people who are series regulars on a fall TV show, I think that that's when they film their other projects. Like I think that's when Stephen Amell filmed TMNT 2, was in the summer when he was off air.
Right.
So I think they have other commitments then.
Right.
But
yeah.
And not only that they're on holiday, but I think a lot of them are committed elsewhere during the summers. So I think that that could wind up posing a problem. In addition to the fact that, you know, maybe they don't want to work on their break. But in terms of, I mean, it makes sense. I see where Travis is coming from here. Like, it would make sense because then – but, like, this year's crossover, I didn't really have an issue with anybody – I mean, you brought up Martian Manhunter and Superman, and I'm going to get into that in a second. I agree with you. I really want them to be in next year's crossover. But there were no omissions from the episode that I felt like were because they were busy filming. Like – I felt like we saw pretty much everybody I wanted to see, and like what they did this year, if you noticed, a lot of the characters that had the biggest role in the crossover this year, they had episodes of their own shows right before the crossover where they weren't around like that much. Like you remember the Midvale episode of Supergirl this year where like Melissa Benoist and Kyler Lee were barely in it, and they had because they did the whole flashback. That episode was all flashbacks. So
sure, yeah.
Arrow did a similar thing because like Diggle was Green Arrow, so they didn't need Oliver as much. Then there was an episode of Legend of Tomorrow where White Canary was she was like in a coma or something. So Sarah had a big role in the crossover. So that's sort of what they did this year, and I think it worked out okay. But in terms of what I'd want to see next year, I agree with you. I really want Superman and Martian Manhunter to both be part of the crossover next year.
Uh-huh.
I'd love it if we got maybe Hawkgirl back, because then you're really then you've got a bunch of the characters from like the Just League animated series original lineup.
I get that, but here's the what's gonna put the kibosh on that. I can't believe I just used that word. It just came up. I don't even know if I said it properly, but anyway. She is scheduled to appear on Krypton. The character, not that same actress, but
so oh, that's true. But I mean, then again, we've had. I mean, is that a problem? Is that would that be a problem for them? Like, I wonder if it would be because like we've had Ra's al Ghul on both Gotham.
Right, but not. Well, yeah, I guess it wouldn't be simultaneous. Yeah, it could work, but I guess it could work. But
I don't even get what the rules are with that anymore because we did just find out that
who the hell knows.
Yeah. Because like we've got, I thought that they were over this whole universe. I mean, and we're talking movies to TV now. Yeah. Where I thought they were got over the whole thing when they finally brought Superman to Supergirl. But like then we just got news recently, that Arrow can't use Deathstroke anymore right now because he's gonna be. They've got plans for him in the movies again. So it's just like I don't get what their deal is. It's ridiculous to me. Like the whole point of separating your TV and film universes was to give them each more freedom, but you're not doing that if you're saying that one can't use certain characters because they're in the movies. So it's ridiculous. But so I don't know what the rules are in terms of TV show to TV show because that's a little different. But I have no idea. But you bring up a good point. Maybe you can't use Hawkgirl. But anyway, she's just another character I'd love to see in it if they can use her. In terms of a story, here's what I would do.
Oh, you actually got theories. All right.
Cool. I've got it's not a specific idea, but it's just sort of a general idea for something that I'd want them to consider.
All right, let's hear it. If it involves Lana Lang coming in, I don't want to hear it.
No, it does not involve Lana Lang coming in.
All right, then go.
Okay, so this year they talked about how last year they did like a big bombastic crossover and that this year they were going to do something more personal.
Sure.
I felt like both this year and last year's crossover actually had a good deal of mix of both bombastic and personal. Personally, sure. I felt like I didn't really feel like there was a change in that. I know they said that was going to be the case, but I didn't really change. And that's not a knock on either one of these crossovers. I love both these crossovers, but I'm just saying that's the way I felt about them.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Okay. So then we're on the same page there.
Yeah.
Next year, I would love it if they did do a more personal story. And here's where I'm coming at from this. The Arrowverse shows, we have had so much time with these characters. And this is why I think – I've talked about it before. And I know – this is something that I know Brent Clark from the DC TV Squadcast agrees with me on. TV is the best medium for adapting comic book superheroes because – it works more like a comic book, like an ongoing comic book, because you have so much time with these characters and get so emotionally invested in these versions of the characters, right? So here's the thing. You can do a really personal story and have it have a huge emotional impact. I would love to see something, not necessarily an adaptation of this, because you even if they did do an adaptation of this, I think you've got a lot of elements in the Arrowverse already to adapt this, but you'd still have to change a lot. And I'd love to see them do it, but also just something that takes – something that's similar to this in how personal a story it is. It's not some kind of alien invasion. It's not them fighting a huge villain threat coming from outer space. It's just from another Earth. It's a very personal murder mystery, and that's Identity Crisis. That is personally I think it's one of if not the greatest Justice League story ever written, and that's because it is very much it's not for me here's the thing Justice League stories a lot of times and I realize Arrowverse isn't technically it doesn't really have technically have a Justice League but it's similar enough and I Identity Crisis focused on a lot of the sort of lesser known DC heroes a lot of which are stars in the Arrowverse.
Yeah.
And so what you can do here is you can have a very what Identity Crisis did so well, and I think a lot of Justice League stories miss the mark on this. Teen Titans.
Well, okay, whatever you do, don't give a review because we'll review since you like it so much, we'll review it on the podcast.
Okay, cool. Well, I won't do a review of it. I'm just saying Identity Crisis, what it did was it really what am I trying to say here? Okay, a lot of
damn if I know.
A lot of Justice League stories. Here's where I was going with this. A lot of Justice League stories miss the mark on the personal and team dynamics of the Justice League. That's something that Teen Titans stories focus a lot on, but Justice League stories often do not. Identity Crisis, however, did. And so that's something that I'd love to see them. I love the story of Identity Crisis, but in terms of it being a murder mystery, a story that's very personal, that's what I'd like to see, a story like that for next year's Arrowverse crossover.
I agree. Look, that's a good point.
Okay. Well, thank you. I guess that does it on all our questions. I know there was something. First of all, I want to thank everybody who sent in questions. I think we did at the top of the show, but thank you again to everybody who left us questions. We really appreciate it. I think this was a lot of fun. You said that there was something you wanted to bring up at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Okay. So I watched the Netflix original movie Bright over the holidays. It was directed by David Ayer, starring Will Smith and Joel Edgerton. I love the movie. It's not going to be a movie review, so don't think that's what we're doing. But I really love the movie. Ignore the reviews from the critics and watch it for yourself. But what I'll say, what really sort of piqued my interest in about it is that movie with all the... Okay, basically, here's what I'll say. And I think I read this... somewhere, it might have been Scott from the Suicide Squad cast had said this. The film is basically if Lord of the Rings jumped forward 2,000 years and was dropped in a Training Day movie. That's what Bright is like. But what really sort of appealed to me and piqued my interest is that this movie was made for $90 million. And I think visually it looks stunning. Effects-wise and prosthetic makeup-wise and all that kind of stuff. Now, what I would do... Look, in my opinion, the fact that Netflix was able to do this for that kind of budget, I think that's going to... And this is why I think critics trashed on it, because they know that if Netflix is successful with this... This could change the movie industry, okay? Because if you can make like basically $100 million movies for a streaming service, well, what the hell is the point of me going to the, you know, driving to the theater, shelling out 15 to 20 bucks for a ticket, and then snacks and food, et cetera, right? So I think that in the long run, Netflix making more of these movies is going to change the necessity for going to the theater. So my point is this: with that budget that they were able to pull off, and with DC and Warner Brothers investing in a streaming service,
oh, I see where you're going here, Adam.
Now, if I'm trying to, look, I took no marketing training whatsoever in school. That's not my jam. If I'm trying to sell this friggin' DC subscription service, not to me, because screw it, I already bought it. Warner Brothers, you have my money. Just tell me when it's dropping. You got my money. But for the average moviegoer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to sell them on this. Imagine for a second if they announced that the next film of the DC Films brand, in fact, the next Superman film starring Henry Cavill, was going exclusively to the DC streaming service. Would that not get every general audience member who's a casual Superman fan, or even the hardcore, and I'll use your terminology, the hardcore DCEU fans, would that not ensure that they would subscribe to the streaming network?
You know, that's a very interesting idea. I think that the only concern I'd have is that with TV shows, there just keeps being more and more coming, so people subscribe month to month to get each new episode.
No, but you can have, what I'm saying is you can have your Titans, you can have your whatever other shows they're going to pump out on there.
Yeah.
But if they to look, because again, I think at some point this because you think about it, all these movie studios like Warner Brothers via DC, Disney, you know, they're investing in their own streaming services, right? At some point, the days of having to run, because look, Disney's putting a Star Wars live action TV series on their streaming service, right? If Star Wars works on there, what is the point? Again, Disney's already having a hard time sharing their profits with cinema theater chains. With Netflix trying this big budget movie on the streaming, this is the beginning of the change. And I think in 10 to 20 years, you're going to see a transition where nobody's really going to the theater anymore because televisions are so advanced that it's like you're watching a friggin' screen, a theater screen. It's as close to the quality, to the actual film you're getting in the theater.
I'm not arguing that that might not be the trend going forward. All I'm saying is with the as it pertains specifically to the DC streaming service and potentially putting a live-action DC movie on there, perhaps the next solo Superman film, my concern would be, in terms of why they might not do that, would be if, like I was saying, with the reason that TV shows work so well on streaming services because people want to get each new episode, so when they release them – each episode by episode, like CBS All Access is doing with Star Trek Discovery, people have to keep staying subscribed, so they keep getting new episodes. With a movie, they could just subscribe for 1 month, see the movie, maybe even see it multiple times, and then cancel their subscription at the end of the month, and then their money, they wouldn't be subscribers anymore.
Sure, but the idea is, you hook the casuals or just the movie fans on a Superman sequel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they start browsing around the network and, oh, look, there's a Titans show or there's this. Or like you can get them hooked. There's a potential to get them hooked after the fact.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
It could work. It could work.
Because I'm not suggesting just put your movies on there. That's not what I'm saying at all. Have all your other content is fine. But what I'm saying is, wouldn't that be a great initial splash when you're launching the network to say, even if it's not necessarily Superman, but one of your DC films is debuting exclusively on the streaming service?
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
And their budget, look, their budget, they can do it.
Well, I don't know if they could do it right out the gates because Netflix obviously has a lot more money than this DC streaming. I mean,
no, but that's why you necessarily start with a smaller brand. Like you start with one of your smaller branded heroes. You know what I mean?
Well, okay. I mean, that's fine. That's fine. I just,
it doesn't necessarily have to be Superman.
Okay. Yeah, I mean that.
And at the very least, we know that with the budget that Netflix gave Bright,
yeah,
that a Superman TV series on the DC streaming service is definitely doable. Definitely doable.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
in my opinion. So, hey, look, it's something for them to consider. And I think more of these streaming services will be considering it. And look, hey, what you're right. Once they build up the viewership for the streaming,
yeah,
I think then they could try that move. So it may not be with a Superman movie, but one of their movies could certainly try it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's a good point. It's an interesting thing to speculate about for sure.
But it just got me thinking. I'm like, look what they did with Bright for $90 million. You're telling me DC could put one of their movies exclusive to the streaming service to drive up their subscriptions?
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying.
It's doable.
One more thing I wanted to mention. I just wanted, because I was thinking about it, I forgot to mention it when I was talking about it, in terms of Identity Crisis. I think it was also, I think Joe Fornarato also mentioned to me that I think I said something about Identity Crisis on Twitter, and he also brought up that it would be a good idea for a for them to sort of take some inspiration for a future Arrowverse crossover. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure I gave credit where credit was due there.
No, it's a great idea. Good job. I'm down for it. But yeah, that was it. I think we've come to the end of our Q&A portion.
Yeah.
So let's do the social media shout-out. Where can we find you, Jordan, to talk about these theories and other, you know, other things?
Yeah, absolutely. What's that?
Other things pertaining to DC, be it Lego, Smallville, whatever the hell, you know, people want to talk to you about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram. My handle on both is at BatFanJordanV. I also want to say if you can join the Multiverse Musings Facebook group. The link is in the show notes. Also, you can find other Bat-tastic Batman-related podcasts at the Batman Podcast Network, which we are a proud member of, if you go to batmanpodcastnetwork.com. And finally, we would love for you to leave us a review on iTunes if you have a chance, and it would really help us out. Yeah.
Well, does this count? I just got a message.
Okay.
From Travis Hines, who we mentioned on the podcast earlier.
Uh-huh.
He said, "Your podcast is awesome, and I can't wait to come on to talk DC. You're saving me on a 4-hour drive." So apparently he's driving to or from somewhere, and it's taking him 4 hours, and he's listening to us.
Oh, sweet. So, well, that's very nice of you, Travis. I'm glad we can help make that ride for a little bit.
Thanks for that, Travis. Focus on the road. Try not to roll your eyes every time Jordan mentions thirst.
I'm hoping he was either stopped or at a traffic light or something when he wrote that. But yes.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Don't tweet or text and drive.
But yes, we do.
Thanks for listening to us, and we can't wait to have you on.
Yes, and I will say, Travis, some of your episodes I know I've listened to on long drives that I've had. Some of your episodes of DC Daily Drop. That you've done the DC TV episodes for. So I will say that you repaid the favor play many of times over of any enjoyment that we're giving you on your ride. I know how that is doing a long ride. I love listening to podcasts on long rides. So we really appreciate the message, man. We are very excited to have you on the show soon. And yeah, I'm glad you're enjoying it, man.
So that's kind of our first little review there.
Yeah. There you go.
And if you want to talk to me or you want to send me your thoughts on the show, and if maybe I put you to sleep on one of the episodes or whatever you want to talk about, you can find me on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi.
Alrighty.
And that wraps up this episode. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful week. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.